80 Catherine Street. He sat on the steps of Tweed Courthouse with his school bag between his knees and watched the attorney's shoes. Not the man. The shoes. The man was too large to look at all at once. Not so much physically, but socially large. Legally large. Made of invisible scaffolds. The shoes were safer. They were black, narrow, polished past usefulness, and the polish carried the pale reflection of the courthouse columns, like a trapped ghost. The boy saw the shoes before he saw the man's face. Faces lied in too many dimensions. Shoes were humbler. Shoes confessed pressure, gait, budget, vanity, weather, anxiety, caste. Shoes took the orders of the body without being able to explain themselves. They were servants of a fiction that walked above them. These shoes said, income, role, permission, ritual, court, deference, cleanliness over truth, surface over ground. They said, I am allowed inside. They said, I belong to the room where another person's fate becomes paperwork. The name was not important to him at that moment. Names were pointers. Names were cheap variables. Names could be overwritten by teachers, parents, officials, doctors, forms, priests, enemies, friends. The mind was the object. The name was only the handle. He had learned that from computers before he had learned it from people. A name pointed. A thing remained. The man with the shoes paused near the courthouse doors and spoke into a phone. His voice came apart in the cold air. Expensive vowels, trained impatience, a laugh that was not joy but a small metal tool. The boy lowered his eyes again. The leather had no creases. The attorney had either bought them recently or, more likely, had learned to avoid walking like a person. That was when the courthouse changed. Nothing magical happened. No angel came down. No devil appeared yet. He did not believe in either, after all. The sky remained Manhattan gray. Chambers Street dragged its traffic west and east. The old municipal stone sat where the old municipal stone had been told to sit. Pigeons continued their idiot parliament. But inside his head, the building unfolded. Tweed Courthouse became a directory. The steps were threshold. The columns were authority display. The doors were authority access control. The attorney's shoes were rolls. Legal advocate, costume, feet. His own knees were body, adolescent, cold, ignored. His school bag was education. Compulsory, carry weight. 80 Catherine Street, his high school. It appeared as a long brick function with too many collars and no declared purpose. He saw its stairwells, bells, desks, laminated notices, security guards, bulletin boards, substitute teachers, worksheets, tests, the TV that gets wheeled out on happy days. He saw the trained fraud of pretending to learn for grade. He saw the silent agreement. Produce the token, receive the mark. Receive the mark, advance to the next room. Advance to the next room, call it growth. But it was not growth. It was sorting. It was grooming. It was the compression of a person into a transcript. The boy understood something on the courthouse steps that no teacher at 80 Catherine Street had ever said plainly. People were not confused by accident. They were confused because clarity would make obedience negotiable. That was the first hammer blow. He did not yet have a public name for it, so he made one privately. Confusion as governance. He placed it in the palace beneath authority / maintenance. His memory palace was not a palace in the old sense. It had no marble galleries, no fountains, no velvet robes. He had reinvented the memory palace on his own, through observation. How he could visit places he enjoyed, step by step, by moving his hand across the wall. He recalled every detail, without skipping a beat. The common memory palaces were too theatrical, too slow, too decorative. His mind preferred infrastructure. He built districts. He built transit maps. He built file systems. He built cities. He built long avenues of cabinets where each cabinet contained not cards, but executable relations. A date was not a date. A date was an important statement. A law was not a law. A law was a dependency tree. A murder was not a murder. A murder was a procedure call with hidden permissions. He never stored a fact alone. A fact alone was a lie waiting for a uniform. A fact had to connect without violation to all the other code. That was the rule. No forced metaphor, no poetic smearing, no mystical fog. Everything had to connect the way a computer program connected, by reference, by constraint, by input and output, by cause and effect, by the permitted shape of the system. Elementary. He had done well in school, except for the grades, which only made it worse. Failure would have left him an argument. Excellence made him complicit. He could produce the answers, and therefore everyone assumed the machine was somewhat working. Inside, the machine was taken apart. Like a little watch. The second hammer blow came when the attorney shifted his weight, and the polished leather caught the courthouse stone. People are taught not to judge, because judgment is the private court of the sovereign mind. That was why the command was everywhere. Do not judge. Do not evaluate. Do not think too sharply. Do not be harsh. Do not be arrogant. Do not be negative. Do not generalize. Do not condemn. Do not draw the lines. Do not notice the pattern. Unless the institution gives you a vocabulary that makes the pattern harmless. But you see, don't judge did not mean to be fair. It meant surrender the faculty by which abuse is identified. Don't evaluate did not mean be humble. It meant, do not measure the ruler. Don't think was almost never spoken directly. That was too crude. Instead, they said, be respectful. Be realistic. Be appropriate. Be balanced. Be grateful. Be quiet. Don't be paranoid. Let it all go. Become fluid in your mind. Oh, how Sol Invictus dreamt of this moment. He opened a new chamber in the palace. Anti-mind command. Inside it, he wrote, do not judge equals disarm moral perception. Do not evaluate equals protect hierarchy from measurement. Do not think equals preserve the machinery. The palace accepted the definitions without errors or warnings. No violation. When he was learning to read, he grabbed a copy of Hamlet that smelled of mildew, and in the back found a series of quotes, one of which he memorized before he understood Shakespeare in full. The devil hath the power to assume a pleasing shape. He did not believe in the devil, oh no. He did not believe in God either. He did not believe in angels, demons, saints, sacraments, relics, holy blood, holy wafers, virgin births, final judgments, burning lakes, immortal judges, or invisible knights. But he believed in patterns. And the pattern had a shape. The shape was pleasing. That was the horror. Evil did not come wearing horns. It came wearing law. It came wearing silk. It came wearing rings, collars, robes, vestments, degrees, seals. Polished shoes. It came speaking of military careers, of orders, family, virtue, tradition, salvation, civilization, obedience, purity, loyalty, faith, and a bit of horseshit that stuck to its hoof. Recently played on TV. Charlemagne. Some mangled show to peddle TV commercials about the birth of law that he never gave a shit about. Evil came with grammar. It came with architecture. It came with schools, and it came with forms. It came with the calm expression of a man who had never imagined that the person he was destroying could be real. Power survives by becoming attractive to the people it diminishes. That was the third hammer blow. He translated the Shakespeare line into the palace. Pleasing shape equals coercion plus beauty minus visible blood and the sacrifice of those kept purposefully uneducated or downright stupid. Then below it, a pleasing shape is what domination wears when it has learned manners. Lipstick on a pig that the courthouse was. The attorney laughed again into the phone. The shoes turned slightly. The reflected cab broke into pieces across the toe. The boy whispered, "Costume object instantiated." Then quieter. "Authority rendered in leather." No one heard him. He liked that. The courthouse was not merely a building. It was a behavioral program compiled into stone. That was the fourth hammer blow. The doors were tall because authority liked to make human body feel late, small, and underdressed. This was not architecture by accident. Height instructed the spine. Marble instructed the voice. Silence instructed the hands. Building as command. He placed that under authority display. Stone, marble, leather. Then the line came whole. Buildings teach obedience before any official speaks. It locked into place. No violation. He saw it now in churches, courts, schools, banks, military offices, universities, corporate towers. The body entered first. The mind negotiated afterward. By the time the person reached the desk, the architecture had already begun the interrogation. The program was already running. Small person, large ceilings, quiet mouth, empty hands, wait to be cold. That was not a decoration. That was obedience training. The hollow attorney's shoes had already vanished inside, but the shoes remained in the palace, filed under pleasing shapes, legal costume, feet polished, distant. Polish was distant. Distance was cleanliness. Cleanliness was innocence. That was how civilized cruelty defended itself. It spared the hand from the wound. It made one person sign, another argue, another file, another guard, another transport, and another forget. And the disproportionate mass incarceration of people broken by the bony hands of poverty was nowhere to be seen. No one murdered the whole person. No one erased an entire mind. Each official murdered only 1 inch. That was the fifth hammer blow. Let harm be divided among offices until no single conscience can feel the body fall. He almost laughed, but it would have frightened his only friend, the pigeon. This was why every system loved procedure. Procedure was not merely order. Procedure was moral insulation. A good form could launder a bad act. A correct process could make cruelty feel hygienic. He saw schools inside the same pattern. At 80 Catherine Street, they did not beat curiosity out of children with clubs. They did something more efficient. They replaced curiosity with deliverables. Under the punishment of a bad grade, which meant bad GPA, which meant no career, which meant becoming a slave. Let the child confuse performance with growth. And he will ask permission before becoming himself, before growing all the way up. The sixth hammer blow. A bell, a grade, a pass, a transcript, a reward, a ranking. The school did not need to hate intelligence. It only needed to domesticate it. It only needed to make intelligence wait in line. And a school full of willing pupils. It only needed to teach the bright child that the reward for seeing farther was to fill out the same worksheet as everyone else, but more neatly. Let excellence be rewarded only when it kneels to format. He felt heat behind his eyes. Now, that was personal. People with filthy hands, reaching into the minds of otherwise rather healthy children. At 80 Catherine Street, he had been told to show work he had already done internally 6 steps earlier, mostly by predicting what horseshit the teacher was going to peddle the whole week ahead. He had been told to slow down. And fill lines. Use the method.
even though he knew how to outprogram every fucking mathematical thing on his little computer. Respect the rubric. Write the answer in complete sentence. Stop asking that kind of question. Save it for later, later, later. And avoid looking the teacher in the eyes as they're having a mental breakdown because the kids are not listening. Later. Later was a form of intimidation. It was where the questions were sent to die because no one trusted these morons to teach in the first place. He did not hate learning. Learning is what we do. But they thought he did. Was a real insult. He loved learning so much that school felt like a counterfeit of it. He loved the clean shock of understanding. He loved Euclid's violence against confusion. He loved code because code could not be flattered or corrupted. He loved physics because the universe did not care who your father was. He loved dictionaries because every word had relatives and a criminal history. He loved maps because maps admitted they were reductions. School asked him to perform learning's corpse. That was the seventh hammer blow. Institutions reward the appearance of understanding when understanding itself would threaten the institution. Are you hearing this, dear listener? You're not a bird for the teacher to puke into your head. There is no such thing as being taught. You can only learn. And you must learn in such a way so that each lesson connects to your existing body of knowledge perfectly. It integrates to help you rise. Be careful what you wish for. The line connected school to church to court. No violation. Now the old machinery appeared not as a cathedral, but as a dependency graph. Doubt was criminalized because doubt breaks monopoly. Heresy. And I mean it in all forms. I mean it in a way where you lift your rear and look the teacher in the eyes and say, I haven't learned a fucking thing today. That kind of heresy. Heresy was punished because heresy proves the mind can exit. Books were burned because memory outlives the executioner. Children were captured early by indoctrination because the adult mind is harder to colonize. It made too many observations. It created too many questions that need real answers, not the putty, to call it nicely, that everyone is trying to plug your questions with. Mercy was called weakness because cruelty needs moral costume. Demons were defended because demonology made persecution look like public health. Blasphemy was invented because invisible authority cannot survive visible laughter. How many of you sat there when the clown in your class finally got what he deserved? How many of you were glad that you were not the gadfly?
He rode faster now, not with panic, but with clean velocity. Doubt is called disease because Monopoly cannot answer questions in daylight. Heresy is treated as a treason because every free mind is a border crossing. Books are burned because the dead author keeps speaking after the living tyrant leaves the room. Children are reached first because the uncolonized mind is the most dangerous territory on earth.
Laughter at the sacred is punished because laughter returns the giant to thimble dirk size.
The palace brightened, not with mystical light, with comprehension. Mystical light asks you to kneel before three waterfalls. Comprehension asks you to rise. I know you're saving this for later, but the boy knew he was building a model, and every model had a leaky abstraction. The boy was going to refine the model until it had no leaks. It's a work of a lifetime. I suggest you follow in the footsteps rather than trying to point out the leaks. It's your mind, too, you know. The boy understood now why good art changes lives. Good art does not decorate the wound. Good art returns the stolen instrument. A song can do it if it's free and you can own it. A film can do it for a moment. A sentence can do it sometimes for a lifetime because you do get to carry it with you. A sentence can enter the mind like a blade and cut the rope around a faculty the reader forgot he owned. One thing that you have to understand is that becoming a philosopher is not optional, or trendy, or out of style. It is a critical part of growing up. It is a very dignified thing, and it's never too late for it. Oh, that is just not true. It is never too late. But I'll tell you what. You can be late. And when you are late with your growing up, no matter the shoe you wear, you still look like a dry cat turd. Philosophy is just a series of books that capture your attention and enhance your mind. You may need to re-listen to the books a few times, but they will help you rise and rise for higher books. The key to reading a book is to becoming friends, sometimes family, with the author. Therefore,
do judge. Do evaluate. Please think. It is your only rescue. It is your only hygiene. It is your restoration of sight. He created a new rule in the palace, made it too large to ignore. Change lives. Then he wrote beneath it, every revelation must pay rent by increasing the reader's power to rise. A sentence that did not increase power was decoration. A story that did not return sight was upholstery. A school that did not strengthen the mind was a farm. The church that teaches children to distrust their own moral judgment or judgment of any kind is a predator with interesting music. A state that sends its young to die without educating them first had not recruited soldiers, oh no! It had harvested the defenseless crops that it grew, and then sent their children to beg for money to help the veterans. He asked his grandma about war early, and she replied that war is what men do. She couldn't explain it, even though she was in it at one point. War had already entered his palace long ago. Boys in uniforms. Boys with slogans where history should have been. Boys with obedience where philosophy should have been. Boys trained to be loud enough to march and empty enough not to refuse. And when protesters rose, when dissenters refused the machinery, when the courageous, beautiful minds became inconvenient, the system found the oldest use for them. First wave. Forward line. Expendable courage. That's where the nation's heart is extinguished. The evil you don't think exists. The devil on whose side you don't know you are. Has been erasing the philosophers first. The boy saw the pattern and hated its cleanliness. The zeal of the district judge to teach you the lesson from Mount High. And if you speak out, he will yell at you and send you to jail for contempt of court, a concept that should have never existed, a concept that has ended discourse. Concept that has poisoned law. A regime destroys dissenters first because dissent is the immune system of a nation, of its people. That was the eighth hammer blow. A nation that starves its children of thought is not preparing them for life. It's preparing them for death. The ninth hammer blow was simple. An uneducated soldier looking to get out of his fucked up village is not an accident of poverty. He is the preferred instrument of men who would never bleed for their own ideas. Every boy who wanted to get out of their house, to just get on a boat or get shipped across the line, had that want manufactured in them. The guilt is imperceptible to you because it's distributed among many people, multiple institutions, all equally starved of resources, all equally impotent to help to perform the job that they were assigned to do. It's a complex system, but a very simple knob to turn. Look how easily your freedom of will, your choice, is subverted, and how well you sing the hymn that gets others to die.
Military changed my life. It completely turned it around.
Was it a direction you chose? Or was your original direction chosen for you? You think poverty is your fault? You were born poor to a poor family and it was just bad luck?
The tenth hammer blow. And he did not write these lines as policy. He wrote them as diagnostics.
The palace had no patience for slogans. It required structure, hierarchy, cross-reference, unit tests. It required a pair of eyes, for fuck's sake, to see the cause, the effect, the hidden incentive, the visible wound. To see where it all began. Decree of the Counterfeit Shepherd.
Let there be an office that claims custody over the invisible.
He stopped. He had to stop. He had to stop to think about this.
Let the invisible be declared higher than the visible, so that visible suffering may be discounted.
Today, you use the word snowflake.
There. That was stronger and much older than the insults of today.
He saw how it all began. The virus is clear to see. A parent dies, and a man comes and wraps a black substance around your head that says, "It's okay. They're okay. You're gonna see them. So as long as you work for me, and then you get to go to heaven. He saw the burnings. He did not look away. The files opened as thumbnails around him, stakes and ropes and cells, exile roads, trial benches, oh, the judges. Banned books, confiscated presses, signatures extracted under fear. He saw not one church, not one century, not one city, but a repeating administrative pattern that collapsed the entire world into livestock, preventing the rise of men and the formation of great beings. With fire.
Let doubt be renamed pollution.
A bell rang somewhere outside, perhaps not from the courthouse. His mind ignored it.
Let curiosity be tried as disobedience. Let disobedience be tried as corruption.
There was a ring that people had to kiss. Let corruption be tried as contagion.
Let contagion justify quarantine, prison.
Fire.
Excommunication. Silence. Servitude.
He breathed through his nose. The courthouse doors swallowed another man in a gray coat. But the papal decree he was inferring from the past continued. Another model, a composite of every pope that ever spake. Mind what side you're on.
Let the moral judgment be renamed arrogant, so the victim distrusts the faculty that would save him.
That was a large part of the anti-mind equation that was getting formalized right here. Let the moral judgment be renamed arrogance, so the victim distrusts the faculty that would save him.
Let mercy be suspected when cruelty preserves the hierarchy.
That line opened a path to his real friends, Castellio, Servetus, opened the fatal logic by which the killer says he kills to protect the soul of the killed.
The sick man who convinced themselves that they loved humanity more than actual human beings. Let the book that questions the demon be treated as an ally of the demon.
Scott, Becker, witchcraft, demonology, the machine that needed devils because the courts needed defendants and the clergy needed terror.
Let torture produce confession, and confession prove the need for torture.
circular, sick, horrible, recursive. He saw it as simple code now. While accused denies, apply torture. If accused confesses, validate torture, expand accusations. Who do you serve? Who do you serve? He hated how elegant evil could be when abstracted by a sick person. That was why abstraction had to be ethical, as inhumane as it is. Listen carefully. A program was not innocent because it ran. A system was not true because it endured. A ritual was not good because it was old. The memory palace widened. A corridor labeled Rome Imperial Sun connected to Rome Church Office. Sol Invictus, I look you in the eyes. Constantine, bishops, popes, crowns, councils, crusades, inquisitions, indexes, mission schools, confessionals that were never secret, courts, bedrooms, especially bedrooms, classrooms. Not one immortal villain. Alone process. Supported by the people uneducated by it. Willing to die for it. Even though it makes them poor and stupid and treats them as livestock. Books are not optional. The system makes it seem like they are. Growing up is a fundamental part of the human mind, and yet no one grows all the way up. How can you not see that? Look how early they get you. Because there is one thing that uneducation does really well. It turns things around on you. And you have to deal with the consequences. And you get cut off from the quest for wisdom. A quest that is even more important than you can imagine. And a few other things that in the end make you a teenager at the age of 80, as you gleefully discuss with your stupid friends how you don't feel like 80. Yeah, no shit, genius. You're not 80 in your mind. You're an abomination who never grew up. And let me make that clear to you. It's never too late to begin. You may not wallow in confusion, never having read a book. It is not something that bears no consequence. Young people will copy you. They can't help it. We're bred for it. And what you've done to your own mind will be done unto other minds that thought you were as you behave, a person of wisdom and authority. Abomination. It is, in fact, a process that evolved, that learned to wear whatever survived, a king of shreds and patches, so to speak. Constantine did not need a secret room. The continuity was public. The sun, the unconquered sun, became the halo, the boot on the throat of every saint they pulled out of their ass. The emperor became the vicar. The sacrifice became the meal. The now corrupt empire became the corrupt church. The shepherd became the owner. The flock became meat that praised the knife. The savant boy murmured, barely moving his mouth. From son to son, to sovereign, to shepherd, to censor, to schoolmaster. A woman passing with a stroller glanced at him, and he continued. He kept his eyes on the courthouse. Let the ruler kneel to the priest, and let the priest crown the ruler, so each may pretend the other is the source. Yeah. The Attila and the witch doctor. Mutual authentication. Like two compromised certificates signing each other. Shit. Let the child be reached before the child can compare claims. Let repetition be called formation. Let fear be called love. Let obedience be called humility. Let natural curiosity be poisoned, be broken, be filled in. Let broken curiosity be cold faith. There was heat in his face now. He forced the program to slow down. Speed was dangerous. Speed made bridges before checking load, so he opened another chamber. Education, 80 Catherine Street. Inside were desks in rows. Each desk had a small brass label. Pretend attention, token recall, grade harvest, authority compliance, bell obedience, hall pass license, ranked children, normalized boredom, and shame. Shame of failure. Shame of the very thing they were selling. Stupid. Shame of bad grades. Shame of not being part of the group. Shame of not looking like everyone else. Shame of not dressing like bird shit. He added a new section to the decree.
Let institutions reward the appearance of understanding when understanding itself would threaten the institution. Let grades domesticate intelligence by making permission feel like achievement. Let the clever child learn camouflage before courage. Let the report card replace the oracle. Let the classroom become a chapel where the rubric replaces revelation. The church of pretending to learn. Let the exceptional mind be praised only when it becomes useful to the average procedure. The attorney stepped outside to end his expensive call on a brick of a phone that needed a briefcase. For 1 second, he looked in the boy's direction without seeing him. This too was data. The boy saw the face now. It was trustworthy, in the way civic statues were trustworthy. Symmetrical, impersonal, trained against interruption. The man's coat fit with expensive obedience. The tie had the small blue pattern of someone permitted to be interesting within limits. The boy thought, "You are not stupid." And that made it worse. The cruelest systems were not maintained by idiots. Idiots broke things too visibly. They just go around demanding their share until there is nothing left. Enduring systems recruited intelligent men and gave them narrow tasks. File the motion. Argue the precedent. Protect the client. Bill the hour. Wear the shoes. Do not ask what the entire building is for. Partial intelligence was the Empire's favorite animal. That was the 11th hammer blow. A system does not need stupid servants. It needs intelligent servants forbidden to integrate the whole. He returned to the folded papal decree model. Let each specialist be innocent of the whole. Let the whole be too distributed to accuse. Let no single shepherd remember the slaughterhouse. And you know they knew about each and every slaughterhouse, because they're the first ones out there to pick over what's left under the guise of helping. They helped, all right. They helped to approve the war in the first place. Let every hand wash itself in procedure. Now, the corridor of popes appeared. He did not see them as men in a parade. That would have been childish. He saw them as versions in a source control history. Some lines added, some lines deleted, some comments rewritten. Pagan grandeur imported, imperial administration refactored, local gods depreciated, festivals remapped, saints substituted, law tables extended, heresies enumerated, books blacklisted, bodies disciplined, women abused and contained, children claimed, kings negotiated, enemies named,
doubt pathologized.
From Sol Invictus forward, not as myth, but as inheritance. Not as one man whispering to another across centuries, worse, worse. As office, as costume, as incentive, as ritual, as trained memory. As an evolved parasite that feeds on human vulnerability and what is left when the feeding ends. As a command structure that did not need every pope to be equally cruel because the office remembered the cruelty for them. That was the 12th hammer blow. Institutions are dangerous because they remember what individuals are too ashamed to say aloud. They think in centuries. We think in decades. We are wildly vulnerable to them. He whispered, I do not believe in the devil, but I can model one rather clearly. In the palace, the collective acquired a name, Pontifex Aggregate. Not a demon, not a person, an emergent object constructed from offices, robes, claims, courts, fear, inheritance, trained interpreters, protected texts, managed women, broken children, obedient men, hungry rulers, frightened peasants, beautiful buildings, music, incense, threats, forgiveness sold after terror, terror sold before forgiveness, and that black wrap that goes around a person's head when their parent dies. You're going to meet them in heaven. Come, my child. Come to our church. Let us be saved. He saw how brilliant it was attempting to be. It was just evolved from shreds and patches. It was emergent. The virus was never designed by any one person. It is literally what's left of the human mind after it fed. That was the part that no teacher in the world would understand. Condemnation without comprehension was useless. You had to understand the engineering of a trap in order to disarm it. So he wrote, Define, Pontifex Aggregate, as the continuity of offices that convert metaphysical claims into human management. Good. It needed to be conscious to behave as conspiracy. But there, it need not be unified to produce unity of harm. Best so far. He opened a side panel in the air of his own mind.
Model PointFX aggregate input, frightened population, heartbroken children losing their parents, ambitious rulers, inherited symbols, uneducated children, uneducated masses, isolated dissenters, theatrical beauty. And collar and guards and columns and shoes.
Process. Bind cosmic threat to earthly obedience. Rename judgment as arrogance. Rename obedience as virtue. Rename doubt as disease. Rename violence as protection. Rename captivity as love.
Output. Manage conscience.
Preferred subject, the child who has not yet compared.
Claims. Failure mode. Free thought. The word failure mode glowed.
Free thought was not an opinion. It was a system failure in the machinery of command. Secularism was not the absence of religion. It was the removal of invisible administrators from public reality.
Humanism was never softness. It was the refusal to feed human beings into abstractions, to treat them as cattle, as sheep.
He returned to the decree. Let the farm animal be praised for docility and punished for memory. Let the gate be called salvation. Let the fence be called tradition. Let the butcher be called father.
You should have seen what it was like. In Würzburg. For a moment in history, the butcher has shown its true face. Burning after burning, the wealthy to take their land, the beautiful so that they may not induce love. The thinkers, so that no one is left thinking. So that all that was left were the farm animals. Just like you see it today.
The courageous protesters that stood up against war, the beautiful young minds that defined a healing country, were the first to be destroyed. They were a hostage, a shield, a lesson to show that we are all animals.
I loved their music. I loved their courage. I loved to see that country heal. There was family there. It all unraveled. It's the same machinery. It's always the same machinery, precisely because you're so comfortable about never having read a fucking book. About always dealing with the consequences of your stupid fucking actions. You never walked the trail. You never set off on your quest for wisdom, for comprehension. Sat there, getting fat, as the machinery was poisoning your mind and destroying your heart, your muscle, with salt and sugar and fat. The boy understood that his model was not only about popes, that it would extend far into future. This was the root of it all. The pleasing shape had many costumes. A priest could wear it, a judge could wear it, a principal could wear it. Your favorite teacher that didn't actually teach you anything was wearing it. A politician could wear it. A parent could wear it too. A scientist could wear it even, if you loved authority more than truth, and many of them do. The devil's hunger was older than the cathedral and would survive its demolition unless named precisely. That was the 13th hammer blow. The enemy is flimsy fantasy. It is the machinery that makes the world unsafe and easy to manipulate. Human beings had not simply chosen stupidity. They had been pruned, selected, frightened, discouraged, rewarded for obedience, punished for seeing too much. Told that their own minds were traps, told that questions were pride, told that doubt was disease, told that pain was purification, told that authority loved them while the authority used them, told to scratch out the eyes of the person that stands up for humanity, so that no one sticks out above the other. Centuries of pruning had produced the modern face, polite, credentialed, anxious, and domesticated, farm animals with resumes. That was the 14th hammer blow. Civilization can become a cage so clean that the captive mistakes polishing the bars for moral progress. Yes, it gets difficult. It becomes a burden when you see it. He pressed his palms against the courthouse step. The stone was cold, cold and useful. Cold returned him to the body. He was young enough to think the model could be completed. He was old enough to know no one would thank him for beginning it. At 80 Catherine Street, there would be homework. There would be a quiz. There would be an adult explaining that success required focus and dedication. There would be some paragraph to write about civic responsibility, perhaps, or the cause of revolution, or the importance of tolerance graded by someone who could not tolerate an unassigned question. He would go back. It was a pleasant place, and he could watch the Brooklyn Bridge from there, including the bench where he would go to sit alone. Even when it was raining, he had snacks in his pockets. He would answer the questions of the teachers, too. But now there was another curriculum. The decree remained open. Let the student pretend compliance while preserving the instrument of sight. Let the instrument of sight be sharpened by every false lesson. Let every costume be praised. Let every institution be asked, what does this make easier and for whom? Let every scared claim be translated into its human consequence. Let every human consequence be counted before the hymn is allowed to continue. Another pigeon had landed near his shoe, considered him, and found him economically irrelevant. He looked downtown, then uptown, and at the courthouse doors. He imagined the attorney moving inside the building. He was a little machine wound up by consequence. Maybe a useful module, maybe sometimes a merciful one too. Always makes them feel better about themselves. But he operated inside a structure that converted suffering into forms, forms into arguments, arguments into rulings, rulings into consequences, consequences into silence, and consequences into consequences. The boy did not yet know what side he had been on. He switched to lucidity. He switched to the side of the question that survives punishment. He switched to the side of the burned book, the exiled thinker, the jailed printer, the mocked skeptic, the child who asks why, and is told, not now. He stood on the side of the woman, called immoral because she refused, the heretic who chose the sentence over the lie, the scientist who says, show me, the programmer who says, define your terms, the soldier who refuses to become ammunition for another man's insane hunger. The human being who says, no invisible office owns my mind. He stood, finally, and lifted his school bag. It was heavier than before because now it contained not books, but evidence. Evidence of corrupt education. In the palace, below the decree, he wrote only, continue. Then he walked toward Catherine Street, carrying inside him a courthouse, a corridor of popes, a pair of polished shoes, a Shakespeare line, the first executable fragment of a life that would no longer confuse permission with truth, and a rule strong enough to keep a beautiful mind from being erased. Good art changes lives because it returns judgment to the judged.